The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Time. Oh God, it's happening again. Why can't we just be good 2 weeks in a row? Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. We've got a stripped back show for you today. It's just myself and George Corgan. Hello, George. How are you? Yeah.
What were you saying 3 days ago, last week?
I can't...
What did I say at the end of that podcast? Oh, we'll lose 4-0.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't miles off with that.
You weren't miles off, no.
I'm all right. Yes, I'm all right. I think we've finished off Chris once and for all, though, haven't we, Tom?
I think we have, yeah. We can neither confirm or deny rumours that he's still in London and he hasn't found his way back to the train station yet. We can't confirm or deny those things, but I'm sure we'll find out soon when we listen to his little travel log that he's done for us. It wasn't a great day, was it? Let's be honest. We've had better days.
Yeah, it was shocking. And well, no, the thing is, it wasn't shocking. I mean, I think that's the thing.
I'm not shocked at all.
No, but I think there's that sort of strange contrast in terms of, like, we keep saying, well, we just don't know what to expect from Newcastle.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's totally right, because look at Liverpool, look at Brentford, look at the contrast in performance, look at the contrast in attitude, look at the contrast in result. But by the same token, that really was exactly what we expected, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, that the unexpected has become expected. So
that's it.
We're not shocked by what happened at all. The disappointment is that just as you think that Newcastle have set a marker down, they have done that reset, they've shown the way forward, they've shown what they can do, we just go back to square one again, and it is desperately, desperately annoying.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but we did say these exact same words at the start of the Liverpool podcast and the week before, after the West Ham and the Crystal Palace games. We said exactly the same things, and that's what keeps happening. We just keep reverting, don't we? We go back, we do something brilliant, we have a good game, and we go back. Anyway, we'll pick the bones out of all of that as we get on. As you all know, Chris was really looking forward to a lovely day out on Saturday, wasn't he? Unfortunately, storm clouds were gathering early on, and so it proved.
Hello, it's Chris Woff here. It's 6:50 a.m. I've just arrived at Central Station, standing outside Greg's, where there's a queue of Newcastle United fans, and I'm drooling over the prospect of a sausage sandwich, but I think I am going to try and resist. This is a big, big day for me, and as much as that may fuel me, I'll try and get one later on. Going down that south, it might be a massive day for Newcastle United, but it feels like a big day for me as well. Going to get on the train, which I'm a bit apprehensive about, don't want to get locked in any toilets, but yeah. Let's see if Newcastle United can add another leg to this topsy-turvy season I've had so far. Can they go to Brentford and continue the wonderful record there against a side with the best home record in the Premier League? I shall check back in with you, hopefully once I arrive at the Big Smoke, if I can beat this storm. Well, Storm Dara did not prevent all these Newcastle United fans from getting to London. It's 10:10 a.m. and the train has just pulled in. I'm walking through King's Cross and did not get locked in any toilet, to be pleased to hear. I do feel a bit lost, so I don't have my little Paddington badge or my sausage sandwich in my pocket, but I'm going to head for something which they call down here the Tube, which I assume is like a crap version of the Tyne and Wear Metro to get across to Brentford. This quick update is specifically for George Colkin, simply because even by my standards, I'm here ridiculously early. The G-Tech Stadium got here before midday, so more than 3 hours before kickoff. I think it must be all of that apprehension, all of the nerves about getting across this massive city, unlike me, to be here. But I just about got here, bumped into John Anderson on the train from Vauxhall, and he said to me, "What do you expect? I have no idea what to think today." That pretty much sums up my thoughts going into this, given Newcastle's inconsistencies. So now before kickoff, and it is raining in towards the press box. It is a bit nippy now, but I have to say that I feel slightly better because I have had a pigs in blanket. I'll be honest, it was a slightly measly sized one that the Brentford have provided on the Christmas dinner, but it's a pigs in blanket, it's a sausage all the same. And the teams are out, and the two surprise selections, albeit, anyhow, actually did trail this almost as press conference yesterday when he said that Sandro Tonali had cramps late on in the game against Liverpool and Anthony Gordon was feeling fatigued. Those two drop out of the side. Harvey Barnes comes in for his first start since the defeat away at Chelsea, and also Sean Longstaff comes back in the midfield. So it looks to be a 4-3-3. Jacob Murphy continues in the side. Two changes, not necessarily ones we expected, but it seems to be down to fatigue more than anything else. So interesting to see whether that side, Harvey Barnes has a very good record. Yeah, he scored in each of the last two seasons for both Newcastle and Leicester. So let's see whether this team can deliver.
OG.
Was it? And he gives it away, this Harvey Barnes. Whistle, right-footed shot. He snuck it in the top right-hand corner. It's a goal for Newcastle. Harvey Barnes has made up for his error.
What an absolutely breathless first half. I'm not entirely sure how to compute what's gone on there, but I'll try my best. I mean, Brentford, you can see why so many goals have been scored here this season, because they're just so ridiculously open. And Newcastle have been the better side, but they've also gifted Brentford one and been poor for the other goal. The first one, Brian Mbeumo cuts inside, loses hold too easily, finishes well from the edge of the area. Alexander Isak then manages to contort his body somehow to turn Jacob Murphy shot with his left foot beyond Flecken with a diving header. Isak then should have scored again when he beat Collins down the right, nicked the ball off and went round the keeper but dallied and Flecken got back. Then Harvey Barnes had an absolute brain fart, passing the ball inside to Johan Visser inside his own half. Visser then finished well from the edge of the area, but then 4 minutes later Barnes made up for it with a really good finish, turning finish in the box across goal. So 2-2 at half time. Newcastle could and should have had more. They'll fancy their chances in the centre half. Brentford are just so open. What an absolutely crazy game. It has also stopped raining, I can confirm, so my laptop has not exploded yet. Let's see what the second half brings.
Diagonal to the edge of the penalty area, and it's all gone all the way through. Gone all the way through, I think.
Collins has scored.
Collins. Here's Wissa. Mbeumo turns well. It's the penalty area. Sharda has finished the job for Brentford. The German skipped into the box, and Mbeumo played it through.
Said, well, I had absolutely no idea what to expect, and after Newcastle were largely breathless in attack during the first half, they were simply toothless during the second, and another exasperating dip in form. So Newcastle vacillate from being excellent for large spells against the runaway league leaders Liverpool in midweek to losing 4-2 at Brentford. Three of the goals that conceded really stopped, even the fourth wasn't great, and Newcastle are 12th. They could drop to 13th. And it was just very difficult to take, really, that, because at half time they were in a decent position, they'd gifted two goals, they then conceded a really, really poor third. It was a lofted ball forward from Flecken. Share jumps, doesn't quite copy the job, it doesn't get there, the ball bounces, Collins finishes. And the Newcastle players are currently stood in front of the away end, who a lot of them have stayed and are applauding them. But this is just, you just do not know what to expect. It is becoming a cliche now in Newcastle. But I came here, and if Newcastle had won 4-2, not before the game, nothing would have surprised me. Instead, they lose 4-2. It isn't a shock. It's just deeply, deeply, deeply frustrating.
Very disappointed. Very disappointed with how we defended today. The four goals we conceded, we'll look back on with real regret, I think, because it wasn't just individual mistakes. I thought it was collective mistakes for all of the goals. Especially the third goal, because I think we were fought back really well from conceding twice, and the game's very much in the balance in that moment. The third goal's really, really disappointing from our perspective. Just a long, direct free kick. We don't do well with the first contact, and then really poorly with the second contact. And that's the frustration, because the issues with the other end of the pitch. And the last two games, we've scored five goals and look really good attacking team today. I thought some of our attacking work was really strong in both halves. And lo and behold, we then go and concede seven in those two games from nowhere, really. And yeah, difficult to work out, because I think structurally we've been fine, but I just think there was a lot of individual errors today. There is a very, very good team in there. I've got no doubts about that, but we haven't shown it consistently enough. We haven't delivered it nowhere near enough for my liking and for everyone's liking connected with Newcastle. So a period of reflection. We've got a week between games, a period of work. The previous two seasons, by and large, I've gone into the games knowing what we're going to deliver, and there's a feeling of excitement before the games.
I think we're in a period now where there's that certainty isn't quite there. There's a vulnerability about us at the moment that we need to fix. The ability is there within the squad. So then there's question marks as to what is that that we're experiencing. And that's what I've got to try and figure out.
Just heard from Eddie Howe in the post-Brentford press conference there, and he was extremely despondent, as you'd expect, and he actually took the measure of apologising to supporters who were at the game today, saying for what they delivered that it wasn't good enough, and pledged to put it right. He was asked directly about addressing them, but he still did offer that apology. But at the moment, it feels like words are one thing and actions are needed. Newcastle are inconsistent. He didn't seem to have answers as to why. He didn't seem to have answers as to why they've vacillated so wildly from one thing to another. And also, he was very, very critical of the defending of his players. He talked about collectively and individually, which is hard to argue against. But it feels like after that, that there's a massive week also coming up. Leicester at home in the Premier League, it feels must win. And then obviously the return match against Brentford in the Carabao Cup, absolutely huge. It's 12:12 a.m. and I've finally gone back into the car at Central Station. We're delayed about an hour and we'll be back. It's been a long day. I'm not going to lie to you. I think going south is extremely, extremely overrated on the evidence of today. I admire all 1,706 of those Newcastle United fans who win the away end, who Eddie Howe apologised to. This felt like a return to the bad old days of following Newcastle United over the last few years. It feels like maybe they've had a couple of seasons of uptick and then this is back to previous times. I realise that sounds very low, but it's been a long day. It was a very difficult second half to watch and I'm just relieved to be back on Tyneside. I hope everyone else got back safely. But yeah, I think I'll be sending George and Jacob to a lot more away games down south, if I'm perfectly honest. This has not changed my view on it.
My word. You could feel how broken Chris was at the end of that, couldn't you? You could feel it.
I mean, the contrast in his voice between the start of that little montage and the end. Oh, dear me.
Absolutely.
Poor Chris.
All light in his voice at the start, thinking about sausage sandwiches and getting on the train and having a nice day out. And then by the end.
Yeah.
Poor lad.
He's just broken.
Just done.
He's broken.
Just nothing left in him. All the light had gone out of him. Yeah.
Done in.
My word.
But you have to say that's pretty understandable in the in the context. He sent me a message not long after full time, I think, like between the match finishing and him sort of setting off King's Cross. He said, "What the hell do I write about that?"
And
it's like, well, that is probably what you have to write about.
Yeah, exactly that.
Ah, dear God. What a club.
Well, he made it home anyway eventually, but he's not quite there yet, is he, to come and podcast with us today, but that's okay. The good news is he's already described all of the action, and nobody wants to relive that particularly, so we can cut straight to the nitty-gritty, can't we, George? We actually played fairly well, broadly speaking, in the first half at least, defence notwithstanding, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like 5 minutes ago that we were talking about Newcastle not being able to kind of create chances, what's gone wrong in terms of the attacking play.
Yeah.
That certainly wasn't part of the issue on Saturday, albeit the team did continue to miss some big chances at crucial moments. I mean, that is fair, you know, that's fair to say. They had some poor luck, obviously, in terms of Longstaff hitting the woodwork, things like that. But in terms of like chances, that wasn't a problem. It was never going to be a problem if you look at Brentford's record. You know, yes, they've got an excellent record at home this season, best in the Premier League. They haven't played many of the big clubs, should point that out. But that wasn't a problem. I mean, that wasn't a problem. But at the other end, it was kamikaze stuff, wasn't it?
Really was,
and
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty brutal when you hear Eddie Howe talking about cringing, you know, that they're defending to make him cringe. And not just, you're not just talking about one individual mistake for the goals, you're talking about several. You're talking about consecutive individual mistakes. That can happen. It rarely happens for four goals worth. And it's, you can't, I mean, they said this, I'm not saying anything blindingly original. You can't win games if you concede like that, can you? I mean, you can't draw games.
I mean, they look tired to me, those four lads. They've played a lot of games recently and they look tired. They look like they could do with a rotate, and we don't have the options to rotate them at the moment due to injuries and availability and all the rest of it. Some areas of the team are rotated out after the Liverpool game, but that defence has to just go again and play that game again. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but I can, you can look at them. The body language isn't quite right, is it? Dan Burn again was throwing himself all over the place, but I've never seen Fabian Schär look as flustered in my life as what he did on Saturday.
Yeah, he's been such a reliable, you know, we know he's getting on, but he's been such a reliable performer for Newcastle. I mean, I think it's probably there where, you know, if you're talking about rotating out, yes, there's Lloyd Kelly who can play at centre-half. There's Emil Kraft who could play at centre-half, I suppose. But yeah, they're missing reinforcements there. It's difficult to use tiredness as an excuse this season. Taylor went. Yeah, Botman's still injured. Kind of coming back quite soon, as Chris wrote about, actually. And, you know, Jamal Lascelles, he's a bit ahead of Jamal Lascelles. Those players are still missing. But apart from that, Newcastle do have a full squad now, and they don't have Europe. Awesome. They don't have the extra games of Europe. Awesome. They don't have the travelling of Europe. Yes, they're still in the League Cup, thank goodness, where, of course, they play Brentford again very soon. But it doesn't feel like that's an acceptable excuse. I mean, it was a massive game in midweek against Liverpool, and they certainly put in a huge shift, all of those players. That's definitely true. I don't want to minimise that. But
it's just when you have the likes of Anthony Gordon kind of being rotated out because he's struggling with fatigue like that. You know, you think, maybe it can affect other players as well, but they don't get the option to be rotated out. You know, that's the only thing I'm thinking.
Yeah, it is true. And definitely, I mean, we could see at the end of Liverpool, you know, obviously there was a bit of stuff made about Tonali coming out of the starting lineup and Gordon coming out of the starting lineup, as you've talked about. Both of those players were clearly fatigued at the end of the Liverpool match. Tonali was treated for cramp. I mean, we do have to say one thing that Newcastle touching every single bit of wood in the vicinity of my office when I'm saying this, but one thing where things have improved for Newcastle this season is in their injury record. Oh, God, I can't believe I've said that out loud.
I mean,
what an idiot.
That is ridiculous.
But you know what I mean? And last season, we were kind of pointing out when players were having to come back into the team too soon and then putting themselves at risk of injury again or getting injured again, the first thing that they have to do is take care of these players. We don't want, you know, of course we want Tonali to play again because he was so great against Liverpool. He was one of the rare bright sprouts.
A bright sprout.
He was one of the bright sprouts. It is that time of year. It is nearly Christmas. Oh God. Yeah. Newcastle's performance was like a bad case of overcooked sprouts. You know, we want to see him play again. We want him to carry on that good form, but we don't want to put him in jeopardy. And, you know, they've got James Bunce there now as performance director. He's leading those things. You have to trust that side of the... I mean, and I know that he came on and probably played 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But even so, I mean, I think we have to take those sorts of things on trust. But yeah, desperately disappointing.
Just put it in the net!
we have to speak about Alexander Isak, and I'm sure we'll do that in a bit of detail. That miss, though, or are we calling it a miss? Is it a miss if he didn't have a shot? I think it's a chance wasted, isn't it, rather than a miss. It doesn't count for XG because he didn't even pull the trigger. But obviously, you have to put those in the net, don't you? And Eddie Howe said these things happen. But are they happening a little too often for such a brilliant footballer, George?
It's very difficult to kind of criticise him because his record has been so good. But I do, and obviously he did score against Brentford. But to me, that was, I think if this was Alan from work talking, he would say that that's a striker lacking confidence because, albeit he showed incredible technique to make space for himself in that area, to kind of get beyond players.
Yeah.
It's not instinctive what he's done there.
And yet, that goal against Liverpool, you would say that is a striker who is anything but lacking confidence, the way he hit that ball.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? But playing for a team that is not fluent, I don't know. It's like he's overthought it. He got so much right. But, I mean, it's also something about him as a footballer that, again, this is something that the manager's talked about, wanting to get more scrappy goals. It's like he's trying to score the perfect goal there instead of just hitting it when he had a chance to hit it. It's a bit reflective of the team as a whole. It's just not coming natural. Even in those parts of the game where they were doing okay, it just wasn't sort of coming naturally to them. There are other parts of Isak's game that I do think we have to point out. And again, Alan mentioned this on Match of the Day at the weekend. It's all very well being a brilliant striker and scoring great goals. And, you know, that is brilliant. That's what Isak's main job is. But he also does have to lead from the front. The defending has to start with those players. That's your first line of defence.
Yeah.
And you could see that contrast in terms of not pressing. It's no good. It's no good playing a pressing style if only one or two of your players are doing it. As soon as one player doesn't do it or doesn't go at the same time as the others, you're lost, you're knackered, you've lost the ball, you've lost momentum, the other team's attacking at you. And we've seen that a few too many times, not just from Isak, but from other players as well. And that's the sort of thing that I find very difficult to accept. They were so good at doing it against Liverpool. Everybody did it at the same time. Everybody was together. One went, they all went. And that was part of what made life so difficult for Liverpool. I know it's a different game, it's different opponents, but there should be no difference in terms of attitude. That's what we talked about straight after Liverpool. If they show the same type of attitude, if they show the same commitment, if they show the same ferocity and aggression against Brentford, they would find a way of getting something out of the game. I still maintain that. You know, I still maintain that. There was enough in that game to show that they could have got something. For things like that to be lacking, for, you know, those basics to be lacking, I think is pretty unforgivable.
I understand as well, though, that that motivation to be up for it like that, like they were against Liverpool, is a lot easier when you're playing at home and you've got 50,000 home fans roaring you on towards the Gallagher end or whatever. But you've still got to do it, haven't you? You've still got to do it week after week. And they go away to Brentford, who they've got a great record in the Premier League, never lost against Brentford before, and then it just falls flat.
I get it, because it's natural, it's human nature. I mean, look at the difference between Brentford's home form and their away form. They've won like...
Well, exactly, yeah.
And so those things happen. And of course, I don't want to say it's easy to get up for it at St James's, but, I mean, maybe it's also a bit of the opposite. Maybe you've got a bit of that fear. You know you've got to perform in front of your own fans. But I do think it's easier to be motivated for a big game like that. It's on telly, it's under the lights, it's raucous, it's a team that Newcastle owe a result, and you absolutely negate the worth of getting a point against Liverpool if you then go out and perform like that and are beaten like that, you know, eventually thrashed like that. That is a big defeat, and part of that is about attitude, and it's the manager's job to motivate his team, motivate his squad, but it's also the responsibility of those players to motivate themselves. And players not pressing at the right time, that's not a failure of coaching, that's a failure of application, that's people not doing what they should be doing. And that's not a good look. I'm afraid it does reflect on those players. I love this team, I love these players, I love the squad, but, you know, they're not bigger than the team, they're not bigger than the club, and in my opinion, they let fans down on Saturday. It's just not good enough.
It's not. There has been an over-reliance, hasn't there, on Alexander Isak? It's not great, is it? Especially after last year when we had the most amount of different goal scorers in the Premier League. So far this season, we've got the least amount of different goal scorers in the Premier League. So we are relying on Alexander Isak far too heavily, and the goals are not coming from around the team.
Yeah, and that's the other side of the argument. And so this is important too. I mean, you know, we look at individual games on the pod. Obviously, we do that. We kind of go through the games, and that's totally fair that we do that. But it's also right that we look at context. Now, we know what the context is in terms of Newcastle and transfers. I don't want people to sort of raise their eyebrows when they listen to this, but it is important. Even great players need to be pushed. A, they need to feel and want to feel that the club is progressing in the right direction, that everyone's on board, that there's a big plan, there's a vision, this is what they're doing it for, this is the reason. But they also want to be pushed. They want to be pushed just by having really great players alongside them. And Newcastle do have some good players.
Of course.
But they also want to be pushed by players beneath them. And we know about Callum Wilson's injury record. In other circumstances, he might not be at the club anymore. You know, so that's not happened. Anthony Gordon, I know Anthony Gordon was rested at the weekend, but most of the time he knows he's going to play. He knows he's going to play because he's exceptional. But he also knows that there's no kind of great competition. And this is a problem that happens at clubs. It's either a form of complacency. I'm not saying it's like a deliberate thing, but you need to freshen things up. And I'll come on to talk about the kind of the coaching implications of that as well. There is mitigation for the players, for the coaching staff, for all parts of the club, but the overall picture is not a good one.
The first half was chaos, let's be honest, but entertaining chaos, wasn't it? Goals from both sides, 2-2 at half-time. But the second half, I mean, that was just stale, wasn't it? And Newcastle looked beaten very early on in that second half, I thought. We didn't look like they had an idea of how they were going to get themselves out of that predicament.
No, and again, that's something that we're familiar with, that what you want when you make changes is for those players, well, you know, from a position of strength, from a position of weakness, you want those changes to make a difference, don't you? You want there to be some kind of cohesion. If things are going well, if you're 2-0 up, you want players to come on and absolutely step on the throat of the opposition and finish them off. If things aren't going well, you want players to come on and change things. And it feels too much of the time at the moment that players are coming on and everything is falling apart.
Yeah.
That's happened in too many matches. It's felt that there's been a lack of cohesion, there's been a lack of structure, there's been a lack of plan. Now, we all know Eddie Howe. We know what his strengths are. His strengths are meticulous detail, meticulous planning, but we're not seeing that on the pitch. And so we have to ask ourselves why we're not seeing that on the pitch. But yeah, it was just a mess.
It certainly was. And as we heard from Chris, Eddie Howe's really so openly forlorn, is he? He sounded very despondent during that press conference. And of course, like you said, he apologised to the travelling fans as well. We don't often hear Eddie talking like that.
He's not had to do it, has he? I mean, yes, I know it's been a tough year, all things considered, or much of it has, but he's rarely had to apologise because, I mean, if you're still asked to talk about Newcastle and Newcastle's strengths, it's about giving everything. It's about, okay, they may win, may lose, but they'll give everything. And away from home, that's not really been the case. And I think this was a real low point. Again, it's not just taken in isolation, coming off after the Liverpool game where things had felt so encouraging, to go from that performance to the Brentford performance as a manager must absolutely kill you.
Yeah.
Because you think you've got this moment, you'll say to your players, you know what you're going to say to your players, it's like, do that again, we won't get beaten. And they didn't do it, and they have got beaten. And so it just feels needless. Part of this feels needless. We've seen in patches that Newcastle are a good team.
Yeah.
We've seen it against Liverpool. We've seen it against Arsenal. We've seen it against, you know, big teams, that they're capable of challenging those teams. Whatever the style they play, you know, the attitude has been spot on. They've shown that they can do it. It's not like an amateur golfer having a round of golf and hitting the ball absolutely all over the place and doing one good shot and thinking, well, that's how good I am.
Yeah.
Because it's not. It's a fluke. Newcastle have done well in enough games for you to know that they're capable of doing it. and then not doing it. And I think there's a real issue here with motivation and attitude. And to me, that is worrying.
I can totally understand the frustration from Eddie Howe's point of view, the reason why he sounded so down at the end of that game as well. I mean, you can do all the prep you want during the week, can't you? You can do as much attention to detail and coaching and drills as you like, but you can't expect Harvey Barnes to pass the ball straight to Brentford's one of the most dangerous players and essentially hand them a goal. You can't, there's no planning for that, is there? That's just things that can happen on the football pitch. But you can understand why it must be so frustrating when you put all that hard work in during the week.
Yeah, and I do mind those errors because they were so bad, and you know, they were bad for all of the goals. So, you know, you have to sort of acknowledge that and say that was terrible all over. I don't mind a bad performance necessarily. I mean, everybody has a stinker, even the best players in the world have bad games. What I don't accept as a fan is that feeling of sort of poor attitude or poor body language or not running. And I think we've seen a bit of that, and that's the stuff that I don't like.
And we haven't seen that as fans for a while, have we? It's not something that we've been used to over the last few years with Eddie Howe. It's something from the past, but you can understand the frustrations of the fans as well, going all that way, travelling down, all the money spent and everything like that. And then, you can accuse some players of not putting the work in. It shouldn't really be the case, should it, with Newcastle United the way they are?
Yeah, and I think the thing is, it also feels like a return to that version of Newcastle where a lot of the damage was self-inflicted.
Yeah.
So in the past, under the previous ownership, it would often come from above. It felt like it would come from above. And there are bits of that happening now. I mean, we know about PSR, which is, you know, it's hindering Newcastle, and it's hindering Newcastle in a way that is sort of artificial because they have wealth, they have theoretical wealth, but can't spend it. And it does raise questions about, you know, what direction the club are going in, and it puts pressure on themselves. And that's the thing, that's the annoying thing. It isn't just a bad result in isolation. It's one of a series of bad results. And it means that just when you think there's some respite, just when you can look forward, you're again looking internally. You're having to try and find answers. We're now approaching a week which feels absolutely massive because Newcastle have got to put this right. They're playing Leicester. We know what will happen against Leicester. They'll put everybody behind
absolutely.
The ball.
Yep.
St James's Park will be nervous. They'll ask those questions, but it's a game that Newcastle should win. We all accept that. The game after that is Brentford again in the yes. League Cup. It's a chance to get to the semi-final.
It's a huge game.
Absolutely
that.
Massive.
That's huge now.
And then after that, it's Ipswich Town. Now, if you get the odd result away from home, if you get the odd decent result and performance away from home, there's not pressure. You can approach those games feeling confident, feeling good about yourself. It just feels unnecessary because I'm not trying to say that Newcastle should be in the top four or anything like that, but they are better than where they are in the table at the minute, or they should be. The problem seems to be, I think, that certain individuals, certain games think that they're better than they are as a team, think they're better than they are. And as soon as you've got that attitude, you're knackered.
Absolutely. Right then, let's move on. We'll have a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment.
It's been a roller coaster. Newcastle, of course.
One week you're cock of the walk, the next a feather duster, and then cock of the walk again, and so on and so forth. It's the story of Newcastle United's season so far. And while we're hardly alone, similar stories for Tottenham, Aston Villa and Man United, more on them later by the way, we do seem to be making a particularly Newcastle-y melodrama about the whole thing. Our Philly brother Josh has been in touch, outlining some of his concerns.
Hello my lovely friends at Pod on the Tyne. This is Josh from Toon Army Philly, and I asked this question today from sunny Dubai. I figured I should get some warm weather training myself before I come over in a month's time when it'll be chucking it and freezing. But I wanted to ask this question with all the back and forth of the performances. Many people are starting to think, how has taken us as far as how can take us? But I just can't help but believe that if he was given more backing, and I know that some of it's not even, I think that they don't want to back him, that just they couldn't because of PSR, but do you think we're all just getting a little too frustrated, and at the end of the day, hopefully in January, we can get some backing and things can change? Also, just want to give a real quick shout-out to Dubai Mags. They were lovely hosts. I got to watch both the Palace and Liverpool game with them. Julie and her crew, great fans, great bar here. So if you're ever in the Dubai area for whatever reason, please give them a check out. They are a wonderful and welcoming group. All the best. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye.
Lovely to hear from Josh there, George.
It sounds like, Josh, I'm sure you'll take this the right way. Josh, my Philly brother, you've been doing a little bit of warm weather training on the beers
it
there as well.
Like I'm hydrated, wouldn't
I be right? You sounded very well hydrated. No, I mean, I think all of those concerns are absolutely valid. I think if people are questioning the manager, that's also valid. They're entitled to do what they want.
Absolutely.
And when you look at the league table, it doesn't make for pretty reading. That's not where Newcastle set out to be this season. He takes responsibility for results. He has to take responsibility for performances as well. That's the bottom line. Eddie Howe, to use his full name, in the absence of Chris, he knows that, and you know, that's the name of the game. That's the name of the business. But I also do think that you can look at games in isolation, but you also sort of have to look wider, you know, sometimes. And something that I have felt for a while is that there is this kind of slightly wider, you know, wider malaise around the club, if that's the right word. So this is something that Alan Shearer would often talk about when he's talked about managers. He says the problem for any manager is that after a certain point, players stop listening to you. And it's not an arrogant thing. It's not a horrible thing. And, you know, he would use this in relation to Kevin Keegan. He'd use this in relation to Sir Bobby, people like that. It's human nature. If you're together all the time, you're spending all this time on the training pitch together, there comes a point where the voice has less impact than it did at the start.
Yeah.
So what do you do? What do the great managers do? Well, the great managers find a way of reinventing themselves. So when you look at the proper ridiculous managers like Ferguson, it's amazing how he managed to do that. Arsene Wenger as well. People who were in the same position for years upon years upon years. They change their coaching staff. They find ways of refreshing. Yes, they can do different things on the training pitch. That's quite difficult if you have a certain way of working without changing your staff all the time. Eddie's not really been there long enough to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the real thing that you do is that you have a refresh of players. And this is something that Alan talks about. You have a refresh of players. So some players go. So some of those players who might be sick of the sound of your voice, they're gone. You bring new players in. The players who are still here are lifted by the new players that come in. The new players that come in haven't heard the manager before. That refreshes everything. And there's that sort of natural process. You know, we know about PSR. It's not like blaming everybody at the club for this situation. To say that Eddie Howe's been let down, I mean, I think I probably have said that. It's a bit unfair in some ways. They pushed themselves massively, and we know the reasons for it. Relegation, Champions League, got into the Champions League, massively ahead of schedule, had to bolster the squad. It's left them with no room for manoeuvre. But the ultimate effect of that is for there to have been very little in the way of first team refresh.
Yeah.
For a team and a club that is still massively transitional in terms of pre-takeover, post-takeover, being saved from relegation, Champions League, Europe, what is it they're doing? And so I think a lot of things are coinciding to make it very difficult for the manager. I don't dismiss the questions about him. My absolute firm opinion and belief is that not only what he did at Bournemouth, but what he's done at Newcastle marks him out as an exceptional head coach, an exceptional manager, one that I think we're lucky to have. This isn't his finest moment. I mean, you know, it can't be because of where the team are and because where the club are. But my faith is that, you know, we've got somebody here who, given the right tools, given the right circumstances, will absolutely take Newcastle to where they need to be. We've seen enough of what he's done so far, whether it's improving, you know, believing in players like Fabian Schär, who might have had a stinker at the weekend, but had been completely written off under the previous manager. I don't need to go through all these players. It'll make people...
No, we've mentioned it so many times.
We've done it so many times.
Players who he's improved, Emil Kraft, Jacob Murphy, and all these players who Newcastle fans would have thought we'd have seen the back of them a long time ago.
Yeah.
But they've shown that they can be part and an important part of Eddie Howe's squad.
Yeah, and so I don't dismiss any of that, but I just think there's a... I just think there's a kind of collection of things all happening at the same time that makes it very difficult for everybody. Again, I'm not, when I talk about players' attitude, this is part of it as well. They're not being pushed. If they're being pushed less by other players around them and they drop off by a percentage point or two, then things become very difficult. Now, talking about Alan from work, he is writing a piece. He's doing a piece at the minute about that. And it's really, it's about this whole sense of a club drifting, which is quite dramatic, if really, when you think about that. He got very angry on Match of the Day on Saturday about about the defending, and he's got a lot of questions about basically about the direction of the club at the moment or the lack of it. We had a little phone conversation. This really is a teaser for a piece that will be going up on The Athletic on Wednesday morning, all things being well. And this is basically how Alan summed up the situation as he sees it.
What's happening with the chief executive? What's happening with the stadium? What's happening with the training ground? What's happening with signings? It just feels it's at a bit of a crossroads. It feels as if it's gone stale. 18 months ago, playing in Champions League football, and no one was really, well, I wouldn't say we weren't bothered, but we finished, what, seventh or eighth, was it, in the league? And I think everyone sort of accepted that because the leap had been so quick from where we were to where we got to. But having done that leap, I think everyone sort of understood that, okay, eighth, because we probably weren't ready in terms of the numbers to having the football club to challenge at that level. But I think from then to now, it's like, what's happened or what's happening, you know?
It was seventh. Not eighth, but level on points with 8th place, Manchester United, who of course completely messed things up for us by then winning.
Of course they did, yeah.
FA Cup, and you know, yeah. And I think if you're the club, you would respond to Alan's points there and sort of say, well, the stadium, we're going through a process. We can't rush that decision. We've got to get it right. Same with the training ground. You know, these are kind of once in a generational decisions. Again, it's a lot of money. You've got to do it right. And that is fair enough, except that, again, players have to buy into something. And I know that, you know, I know that players like Bruno and Isak came to the club at a time when they were being told, oh, yeah, we're going to get a new training ground. We're going to do this. It's a little way down in the future, but not too far.
Yeah.
And, you know, Newcastle still aren't an elite club. They want to get there. But it does feel like we've lost all of that sort of impetus and momentum. Let's not forget, it's the team. It's the team. It's the first team, backed by money, obviously, that got Newcastle to that elevated position, that got Newcastle out of trouble, that got them into fourth. And it's still the team that is having to kind of lead all the conversations. So I think those points that Alan makes are very legitimate and very interesting. And as I say, that'll be a big column by him on Wednesday morning. So please check that out. I do think it feels like an interesting moment for the whole club,
does,
on and off the pitch at the minute, doesn't it?
Yeah, that'll be well worth a read. We mentioned George, Manchester United earlier on, whose primary function at the moment seems to be cheering up the fans of other clubs, which is quite nice of them, isn't it? Dan Ashworth has left Old Trafford after just 5 months, less than his gardening leave time, that is, 5 months. And according to our colleague Laurie Whitwell, speaking on our sister podcast Talk of the Devils, it was related to a very interesting managerial dispute.
I think primarily the appointment of a head coach is a significant factor in all this. So you've got Ruben Amorim coming in, and that was driven by Omar Berada, we're told. Obviously, Sir Dave Brailsford, you've touched on him. He was definitely involved. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, nothing happens at this football club without his say-so, certainly nothing major, and even some of the minor stuff that goes on as well, which we might get to in a piece that we're currently pulling together on a year of Ineos. But if the sporting director isn't primarily responsible for the new head coach coming in, there's an issue there, right? And from what we're told, Dan Ashworth was sort of advocating for other individuals with more Premier League experience. So Eddie Howe, I know there's been a lot made about the difficulties that he had at Newcastle, and certainly I think the line management, so to speak, was a bit confusing with Amanda Staveley there. Eddie Howe could go sort of directly to her, but I think the kind of issues between Howe and Ashworth are kind of overblown. I think he was certainly someone that he thought could be a fit at Manchester United.
Interesting stuff, George.
I mean,
Dan Ashworth had his eyes set on Eddie Howe at Newcastle. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, fascinating. Obviously, I'm glad from Newcastle perspective that that wasn't something that happened or was floated. I mean, I was going to say I wouldn't wish that job on anybody. I mean,
absolutely not.
It's difficult to take that kind of vicarious pleasure. Is that a word? Vicarious pleasure? Is that what I mean? Vicarious pleasure at where Man United are, because we're only 1 point ahead, yeah, and one place in the table. I suppose it does show how difficult it is, or how difficult it can be, to take over a club or partially take over a club and go again. It's illustrative in that sense. And no matter how much money you do have, and Man United, you know, are luckier in that respect, because historically they've got that, you know, those huge commercial deals and all of that kind of stuff. It's not easy, but yeah, it hasn't worked out for Dan Ashworth. He is someone who, it certainly feels from the outside, he's kind of moved on very quickly in jobs, sometimes onto the next big thing, and it hasn't worked. But I'm sure he'll get nice compensation for that, and I'm sure his garden will be beautiful. Let me, yeah.
Oh, it's going to be gorgeous, isn't it? Oh, my word. We've got some emails and messages. This one, I love this, from Martin. Why do we always disappoint? Is it just the way things are?
Well, Martin, yes.
Yes, Martin, that's it.
I mean, how long have you been a Newcastle fan? I mean, if it's only been the last 3 years,
haven't
then,
we said, though, George, so many times in the past, when we started this podcast, what, 5 years ago or whatever it was, we said,
yeah,
every week it felt like we said, things are just very Newcastle United at the moment. And then for about 2 years, we were like, this is totally, what's going on? Everything's so what's great. This isn't Newcastle, yeah, United at all. And now it feels like we're back to it being Newcastle United again.
Yeah, it does feel like that. It does feel like one step forward, two steps back, or can't sort of put, I mean, in the olden days, it was like the club couldn't put two good decisions yeah together. And at the moment, we just can't put two like good results yeah together, two good matches together. Maybe this was always going to happen in terms of, you know, that first burst of momentum.
Yes, the initial bump.
Whether it was the team or the club, it was going to be so difficult to maintain that, particularly with the way that the Premier League is framed in terms of financial fair play and PSR and those sort of things. It was going to be very, very difficult. But it has certainly crashed down to earth. But yeah, well, this is a bit more familiar, isn't it? This is a bit more like the way of life. It feels worse because we've had better. I mean, so when it was constantly batshit or constantly mediocre, at least you knew where you stood.
Yeah.
And at the minute, we just don't know. Are we angry? Are we happy? Are we sad? Are we disappointed? Are we still optimistic?
1 week I'm on top of the world. The next week, I don't know what the hell's yeah going on anymore. The next week, yeah, I feel great again, and that we've yeah got a fantastic team who could potentially challenge for Europe. The next week, I think we're only a couple of points above the relegation zone here. We're going to be in trouble if we're not careful. It's ridiculous, George. Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous. It needs to settle down.
It's Newcastle United Football Club, to give them the full name.
Right then, let's talk about the Lasses briefly. Well done to the Lasses, and especially centre-half Hannah Greenwood, not known as a source of goals, but she provided both of the goals as they beat Middlesbrough 2-0 in the FA Cup. More cup action on Wednesday night as they faced Manchester United, them again in the League Cup. And that's a really tough test, George, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure we all remember the result.
We do.
Against them last season in the FA Cup. That was a tough day. Although I think they took a lot out of that sort of occasion and performance. Yeah, good to get back. Good to get back to winning ways. Whatever the competition, and in a derby, it was horrible weather, as we know, at the weekend. So that's good. So yeah, let's hope that they can kind of build up a bit of momentum again. You don't have to win necessarily to build up momentum, but yeah, they need a bit of that because it is such a strange month in terms of matches, in terms of fixtures.
Fixtures are all over the place, aren't they? And speaking of fixtures, there's an absolutely huge spell coming up for the men. Winnable league games, hopefully, against Leicester. But the way things are, who knows?
Well, Man City,
are they winnable?
Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea, they're winnable.
No.
Leicester, Ipswich, no. Brentford, I don't know.
It's all over the place, isn't it? Yeah.
What do you think? I've talked a lot in this pod, Taylor. How do you feel generally about the sort of state of play at the minute around the club?
I genuinely don't know what to think at the moment. I feel like there's so much positivity there that we could, you know, I think there is so much good going on in the club at the moment. We've got so much good stuff happening. We've got fabulous players. We've got great crowds. We're selling out every game. There's some great stuff happening, but it just feels like it's slightly out of reach, doesn't it?
It does.
Just feels like it's not quite there.
Yeah.
You know, people like Anthony Gordon, Bruno Guimaraes, Alexander Isak, the players that 5 years ago we couldn't have wished for. You know, we would have had no chance of attracting those players to Newcastle United. Now we have them, and it feels almost like we're there. We're practically touching, you know, the promised land, but we can't quite get to that point. It's frustrating, George, is what it is, because
it is.
You just don't know where you stand with this club. And, you know, we make a joke about the sort of the nature of it all, and 1 week it's great, the next week it's terrible. But you would like to think that they're moving in the right direction. You'd like to think at some point it's all going to start to come together.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a straight uphill, you know, it's not going to be a shoot for the stars kind of thing. You can't do that anymore in football in the Premier League. It's almost impossible to do that now. But you would hope the club is travelling in the right direction.
Yeah, and I agree with all that. And, you know, when we're talking about sort of when Alan's asking all those questions, I think they're interesting and I think they're valid. The bigger picture is, you know, we know what the overall ambition is. It's really just how do we get there, and how do you recapture momentum? How do you show momentum? And it feels to me like the sort of vision thing has gone a bit from the club. You know, you talk about the players we've got. I totally agree. But what you don't want is for them to feel in any way, shape or form that they've outgrown the club. Now, in some ways, like with Bruno, if we go back 3 years to when he signed, there was always that feeling that, you know, maybe we get 2 good years service out of him, 3 years service out of him, and he would have to be sold. If they doubled their money, that was put to me by someone at the very top of the club. I wrote about this last week, that if they doubled their money on him, that was job done. Nobody wants to sell Bruno. Nobody wanted to sell Bruno, but that had to happen. And of course, as we all know, that sort of thing hasn't happened yet. What we've had in the past, so even in that, like that brief bit under Ashley, when we were signing all the kind of young, talented players in France, spiky attitudes, thinking that we were being really clever, the thing that spoilt all of that was that there was this glass ceiling at Newcastle, and we knew and they knew that they would have to leave to fulfil their ambitions as footballers. And it worked out, you know, worked out a bit for some, didn't for others. But that, you know, that was the thing that spoilt it, was that they were never going to fulfil their ambition at Newcastle. Now, I think at the minute, we're at this delicate point is that if you're Isak, if you're Bruno, if you're Gordon, if all of them are thinking at the same time, I'm not sure that I'm going to get to where I want to go in this short career here. And you've got that feeling taking root in a dressing room. That is really damaging, because Newcastle have had that in the past. And I'm not saying it reflects on them as characters, but if it does even just infect the dressing room a tiny bit and they can't rouse themselves at Brentford, then we have got problems. We've got problems as a club and as a team.
I'll tell you one thing, though, George. I'm no longer terrified of losing a good player like I used to be at Newcastle United. I used to worry as a fan that we would sell our best players and never replace them, never be able to spend that money, and we wouldn't see any improvement in the team. Now, if Bruno Guimaraes left in the summer, or Alexander Isak moved on, Anthony Gordon moved on, I wouldn't be terrified of the prospect of losing them, because I think the club would go and spend that money and try and replace them, you know? So I don't have that kind of crippling anxiety of worrying, of knowing that they're not going to come back into the squad. They're not going to put the money back into the squad, whereas I think they will do now.
No, I agree. I agree with that. It's not like the money that's brought in would get spent elsewhere or not spent at all. I totally accept that. And I agree with you. The worry that I would have in those circumstances is two or more basically insisting that they have to leave at the same time. And that puts, Newcastle's, when we talk about Newcastle's recruitment, in terms of the people that they've brought in, it's been by and large very, very good. Obviously, in the first 18 months, it was exceptional. It's been a little bit more tricky. Let's not include the fact that they haven't bought people or haven't bought enough people. But it puts a lot of pressure to buy players who are as good as
Bruno
or Isak. So that would be my concern about that. But no, I agree. All clubs have to do it. It's a horrible thought. As a Newcastle fan, I've been burnt so many times in my life with our great players, often homegrown, leaving. And, you know, you just don't want it to happen, but it has to happen.
Well, I think we have to brace ourselves and come to terms with that fact that there is going to be churn, there are going to be trades, there are going to be players that leave and players who come in.
Yeah.
It's part of the way football is now, you know?
Yeah, and we saw a lot of that. Not churn, because it was building on what the club, you know, on what the club already had, but there does need to be that refresh now. And I hope... You know, I hope that the people at the top of the club can see that for January. It isn't just about, I mean, yes, PSR, all of that kind of thing. But from a footballing angle, from a footballing perspective, it's imperative that there's new faces and good new faces coming in January. I think the season could hinge on that.
Absolutely. Right then, thank you very much to all of our correspondents at podonthetyne.bsky.social on Blue Sky, and still at podonthetyne on X, Twitter as well. Thank you very much, George. Thank you for your time. Just the two of us today. It's been nice. It's been fun.
It's been intense, isn't it? When it's just two of you.
We've got some cathartic energy out of this, though. It's been all right.
I mean, with no Chris to sort of take the mickey out of, I feel like I should take the mickey out of myself.
Take the mickey out of me. It's fine. I'm wearing a ridiculous hat today. You haven't mentioned that, and I'm quite surprised.
It's a Boston Red Sox hat.
It is. Yeah, well spotted.
I know. I like. I've seen the Boston Red Sox. I think you look good in that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'll take that. See, we can be nice to each other on this podcast.
We certainly can.
It doesn't happen very often, but we can.
Well, it's teamwork. We are providing an object lesson.
Trash.
Object lesson back in teamwork.
Of course, your emails and voice notes are welcome too. Please do them in the style of Sean Connery. That would be lovely. The address is podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Thanks very much for your time, George.
Very good. What will we get next week?
Who knows?
Dread to think.
Who knows? Roll the dice. See what happens. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, have a great week. We'll speak to you very soon. Goodbye.
Athletic FC Podcast Network.